Welcome to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk. Here's your host, Jason Davis.
Good morning, soccer people. Welcome to Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. Big show lined up for you today. Thank you very much for joining us as always. Let me go ahead off the top of the show, since I always do this stuff at the end. Sometimes I think it gets lost. Remind you that we're on iTunes. We have YouTube video stuff. Speaking of iTunes, I was just, I'm not really the guy that goes and looks and sees what our ratings are, like star-wise or comments on the show, but I'm sure that we probably need more. Like, we always need more. If you like the show at all, please go give us a rating and review at iTunes. It would help us out quite a bit in the battle to be relevant in the podcast world or something like that. It's cutthroat, guys. Like, you have no idea. No, I'm just kidding. It's not. We're all friends. We all compete in a friendly manner. Big show for you today. As I mentioned, we're going to cover the news here in a minute, but I want to let you know that David Cartledge, our friend in Spain, will join us at 9:10 to go over some of the Champions League stuff, maybe take a peek at La Liga. Ronaldo. My good God, Ronaldo. It is insane what that man is doing right now. Let's do that. Let's dive into the news, where we will touch on the insanity that is Cristiano Ronaldo. Champions League results from yesterday. Both of the Manchester teams fall, PSV 2-1 over Manchester United. Obviously, that game marked by the gruesome injury suffered by Luke Shaw, breaking his leg in a challenge by Hector Moreno of PSV. I have not watched it, and I'm not going to watch it, and you can't make me watch it. I had that game on my television. I'm sitting in my house on my couch, working on some stuff on my laptop while the game's on my big screen, and I look down either at Twitter or to right, and I look up, and Luke Shaw is being attended to, and I'm seeing on Twitter that he broke his legs, and I'm like, no, his leg, and I'm like, nope, not going to do it. I've seen gruesome injuries before. I'm not a fan. So if you want to ask me about whether the challenge deserved a red, I don't know, and honestly, I'm not going to know. Manchester City falling as well. This one much worse, if you can imagine. 1-2, Juventus with the win. Mandzukic and Morata score for the Italian champions. Not going well for Manchester City right out of the gates in the group stage. Remember, this is the competition they continually target as the goal for a team that has dumped a ton of money into their squad year after year. PSG 2-0 over Malmo. No, Ibrahimovic did not score. Cavani and Di Maria did the honors, but PSG with a win. Real Madrid, as mentioned, Ronaldo, a hat trick. Two of those were penalties. 4-0 over Shakhtar Donetsk. And Ronaldo now with 8 goals in his last two matches. Wolfsburg 1-0 over CSKA Moscow. Benfica 2-0 over FC Astana. Galatasaray, losers to Atletico Madrid at home 2-0. Sevilla 3-0 over Mönchengladbach, so it does not go well for the German side either. Champions League scheduled today. Bayer Leverkusen versus Bate. Roma hosting Barcelona in a big match we'll talk to David Cartledge about. Valencia hosting Zenit St. Petersburg. Gent versus Lyon. Dynamo Zagreb versus Arsenal. Chelsea, amidst all that drama in their league campaign, playing host to Maccabi Tel Aviv. Olympiakos hosting Bayern Munich. Dynamo Kiev hosting FC Porto. The CONCACAF Champions League, DC United has booked their place in the knockout round with a 2-0 win over Robbie Unido last night at RFK Stadium. Real Salt Lake gets a single point in El Salvador in a goalless draw against Santa Tecla. And you have Vancouver hosting Olympia of Honduras tonight in that competition. Speaking of that competition, after the match against the Robbie Unido last night, Ben Olsen dropped a hint that CONCACAF is considering changing the schedule for the Champions League in this part of the world, acting as though, I'm not sure, I didn't see the inflection, I didn't hear the audio necessarily, but the quote is, oh, did you guys not know about that? I guess it was an email. Oops. This could come as early as 2017, and what it would do is obviously switch the Champions League from this split calendar situation where the group stage happens in one portion or in one year and one season for MLS, certainly, and then carries over with the knockout rounds happening the next spring. The plan is to have, apparently, The plan is to have the entire tournament take place over one calendar year. This would certainly benefit MLS teams who right now suffer from being in preseason form when the knockout rounds come around in early spring. But it would also benefit Mexican teams. If you think that's counterintuitive because they have such a big advantage, because of being in form when the knockout rounds come around, they do play. They will be in relatively good form deep into the Apertura by the time the finals come around in a Champions League that takes place over one calendar year. And it would mean much less of a gap between winning the tournament and going into the Club World Cup, which has been a hindrance to Mexican teams over the past couple of years, not performing well at the Club World Cup because it's an 8-month wait until they go into that tournament, and Mexican teams turn over perhaps as much as any team in the world. MLS news, Los Angeles Football Club has confirmed that will be the official name. They will be called LAFC. That was dropped yesterday. We talked to Kevin Baxter over at SiriusXM FC about the campaign to market to millennials in Los Angeles. I'm softening a bit on my stance on LAFC. It's still a little weird, but I kind of get it. MLS has rescinded the red card for Sporting Kansas City's Dom Dwyer that he picked up in their loss to Orlando City on the weekend. He was sent off for shoving Orlando City defender David Mateos, who made a meal out of it. Certainly went down as though he had been punched in the face, and there was no such thing happening there. While I think that the red card is harsh, I sort of saw the wisdom, or I saw understood the red card, even if Mateos had made something else out of it. Rescinding the red card completely, I'm not so sure about that, but alas, when simulation is involved, that's the reaction. Got games tonight in MLS. NYCFC hosting Toronto. Big game for Toronto as they try to maintain their spot in the Eastern Conference playoffs structure. New England hosting the New York Red Bulls in a big, big, big match in the Eastern Conference. San Jose hosting Montreal. Problem for Montreal. Per reports, no Piatti, no Drogba, no Evan Bush, no Justin Mapp, no Donadel, and no Laurent Simon. So that is a problem for Montreal if all of those players are missing. And finally, the Frisco City Council has unanimously approved $39 million in improvements to Toyota Stadium there, FC Dallas's home venue. This could pave the way for the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame to be located in Frisco. We reported on the talk that there were a couple of different bids, including one, I believe, in northern Pennsylvania for a home for the U.S. Soccer Hall of Fame. This one, the plan is to also maybe move it to Frisco, Texas, and this $39 million improvement plan is thought to be a precursor to that, although no deal has officially been announced. All right, let's step aside. We'll get our friend David Cartledge on the phone, and we'll talk Spanish clubs in the Champions League. We'll talk La Liga. It should be fun. Don't go anywhere. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com. Face in the crowd. Talking too loud.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. A Wednesday in the middle of September, and what that means is that we have Champions League to talk about. We're going to do that from a Spanish perspective with our friend David Cartledge. You can follow him on Twitter at DavidJACA. David, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. Nice to be joining you again.
It's nice to have you. All right, let's touch on the Champions League results from yesterday. I think it begins with the performance of Cristiano Ronaldo, both in the league from the weekend and heading into this match where Real Madrid just took apart Shakhtar Donetsk. Now, two of these goals are penalties. Some people will obviously will minimize that a little bit, but come on, 8 goals in 2 matches, that's insane.
Yeah, Real Madrid is about their attacking power, and they're doing exactly that. So you can't really complain about that, no. The penalty decisions were a little fortuitous, shall we say, and Sergio Ramos tried to get another one as well, which is absurd.
Yeah.
I think that vine going around, it's hilarious. They showed their power, and they did what they can do.
Now, Shakhtar Donetsk, not the strongest team they're going to face in this competition, clearly, but at the same time, it's important to start. It's important to start well, I suppose. What takeaways are there? Because, you know, Rafa is of a particular sort of interest in his leadership of this club.
Yeah, I think at the moment it's a case of, Rafa keeps saying that the team must improve, and the opponents are having too much of the ball. That's what he's saying at the moment. So that's an issue I think that they're trying to address game by game on that basis. And the opponents are getting chances. That's the thing. They are allowed time to build and take games to Madrid, but nobody has really punished them so far. So it's a case of when will somebody actually do that? I mean, and not to down them, to down Real Madrid or anything. They've had quite an easy start to the season. I know they're away to Espanyol when they put them goals in, but Espanyol are a team they notoriously walk over. And then they've got Granada to play next, and they've lost the goals against Granada. So it's a case of waiting for the first real test, I think, for Real Madrid. I don't think they've been tested properly yet.
We'll see. We're obviously going to see them tested at some point. I guess that's when we'll find out again whether or not Rafa has them headed in the right direction. All right. So we also had in the Champions League yesterday Sevilla taking out Mönchengladbach 3-0. I think that says a lot about. Look, it's on Sevilla's home turf, and that helps. But this says a lot about Mönchengladbach and their start to the season. But you can't take anything away from Sevilla.
Absolutely not. I think Emery's made for this competition. I think in the past when he's been here with Valencia and when he was later with Spartak Moscow, I still think he was making the same old errors that he had before, and he wasn't really improving. But I think now he's a far superior coach than he was many years ago, and Sevilla see the benefit of that. And it will be interesting to see in the future in the away games and things how he fares. But I think Emery's a coach who's he set up perfectly for this competition. Sevilla could do well and could maybe get the odd scalp or two if they get their forward line sorted out.
Well, it helps them in the group that that Manchester City started so poorly with a home loss to Juventus. I imagine that works in Sevilla's favor. Also, Atletico Madrid, 2-0 winners on the road at Galatasaray. Turkey is notoriously difficult place to play, particularly in this competition. A strong performance from Atleti, certainly, but what was it? What kind of performance was it overall? Did they dominate Galatasaray? Were they opportunistic? How does this fit?
Yeah, this is the game that I paid most attention to out of all the Spanish teams last night. I revisited the others, of course, but this is the one where I watched live and wanted to watch as it happened. And it was just a brilliantly executed performance from Atleti. It was very expertly done. The crowd barely had a chance to get into the game because Atleti had shut them up straight away. And once they did that, you felt they could build on that. And they did, exactly did. They got those two snap goals and they just really killed the game off with wonderful authority. And they didn't really need to be amazing. They were just experts in how they did it. They'd been here before. They're very good. I think it's only one loss in their last seven away European group games, which is just outstanding. And I was really impressed with how they went about the business.
So that's three wins to start the group stage for the Spanish clubs. You got one more team in action, obviously. That's Barcelona today. They're in Rome. Favorites, but by how much? And really, what can Roma do to try to slow down Barcelona?
Yeah, don't forget there's Valencia as well.
Sorry, I apologize for that. I did skip over Valencia. I have them right here on my schedule. Yeah, at home against Zenit St. Petersburg. So we'll come to Valencia. I've already set the table for Barcelona.
Yeah. So Barcelona. Yeah, I think when Roma started the season really well, so I think they'll be quietly confident. I think that they can do something. But like De Rossi said, they have to tackle the Messi threat head on. They can't ignore it. They can't focus on other areas. They need to shut him down and And I think that's going to be their primary task. And I know it's very basic analyst, but that's what they have to do. They have to shoot Lionel Messi down. And if they can do that, then they can build on their own game, and then Roma can maybe cause surprise. And I think they certainly kill. Roma's got some good players who could hurt Barcelona.
Well, there's already these narratives that are coming out. I mean, you know, whether or not they are, you know, they certainly have some appeal, but whether or not they're accurate completely in a general sense, I don't know. But there's, you know, obviously the both Manchester teams lose. Obviously, Manchester City at home, that's particularly damaging to their cause. But there's also this, oh, well, the Italian teams are, you know, obviously very tactically sound, and they come out and they know how they want to play, and they use that to their advantage. Is that something that Barcelona is going to face? Is Roma of that particular ilk, or is that just a general, you know, is that the general thing we say about Italian clubs that doesn't always apply?
Yeah, I think it's part and part. I think there's definitely some substance to that sort of claim. I think the Italian teams will still set up a certain way. They are very tactical. It's a very tactical league. You have to be a special player, I think, to succeed in that league. And really understand it. And then on the other hand, I think that Rui Garcia, you know, he's a really good way of playing. I think he will commit numbers forward, I think, for Roma, and then they will have a go at Barcelona, because this is the problem sometimes. We're talking about Real Madrid not being tested. Teams need to go at Real Madrid and Barcelona, you know. They need to have a go at them. They have got vulnerabilities. There's weaknesses there, and teams have to go at them. So I think it would be in Roma's best interest to actually commit numbers and put in an attacking performance against Barcelona.
You certainly can't play afraid, not at home in the Champions League. All right, let's, as I mentioned, I didn't mean to skip over them, so apologies to any Valencia fans listening right now. Valencia at home to Zenit St. Petersburg. Give me the outlook for that match.
Yeah, it's Valencia's return after a few years away back to the Champions League. As you and I, Emery, had them in last time. And basically, it's in Valencia back where they belong, and while they need to produce form against they've got some of their own issues at the moment and in their domestic league and in terms of Andre Villas-Boas. So I think they're a team that's vulnerable in Valencia. I think need to capitalize on. I think they need a performance as well, because Valencia's start of the season hasn't been particularly spectacular. They were shocked a little bit by Monaco, but gradually got through that one. And then in the league as well, they haven't been entirely convincing. So I think they really need a performance against them in front of the home fans on a night which should have a good atmosphere.
Yeah,
there's a lot of people looking forward to Champions League football again.
Especially because that group sets up so nicely for them. If they can get off to a good start, I mean, that's not the toughest group in this competition.
Yeah, exactly. It's something that Nuno has got to look at and think, look, we can get through this. And I think the expectations around Valencia as well as look. Take advantage of it, get a scalp on the way. So that'll be they definitely know here to make numbers or happily fall back into the Europa League.
And again, the overarching narratives. I mean, let's imagine that Barcelona handles Roma, even if that's a draw on the road. I think that's something they could stomach. And Valencia at home takes care of Zenit St. Petersburg. Now we're talking about all of the Spanish clubs coming out strong in this competition, and just a reinforcement. And especially, David, I imagine a good thing for Spanish football that it's not just Real Madrid and Barcelona, or even Atleti, who has had success in this competition recently. But you throw in Sevilla and Valencia starting well, and you kind of continue that that narrative that is that Spanish football is fairly strong, a little bit farther down the table than most people give it credit.
Exactly, and this is the best case. This is the best opportunity for these teams to show that. And you do rightly say the teams after Atleti, they need to show as well, because okay, Atleti have got themselves on that pedestal now. People know they produce good players. They end up selling them on, okay, but they know they're a good team. And now Valencia and Sevilla, they need to show. I know Sevilla have got that Europa League win, but people are maybe still not taking them entirely seriously. So Valencia and Sevilla are in a great opportunity here. And in the Europa League as well, I think the Real have got to show, you know, Athletic Bilbao, they've got to show a better account of themselves as well in that competition. So, yes, absolutely. These teams must really put in a performance, I think, because it's still up for me to La Liga have to prove.
And there's, I mean, we've talked extensively about some of the imbalance issues in Spain. And I read ahead of the start of the group stage of the Champions League, David, somebody, there was a piece out that identify the gap between the biggest clubs, the richest clubs in this competition, and some of the smaller clubs? Obviously, FC Astana is getting a lot of attention for being way out in Kazakhstan and obviously being a small club. But the gap is something like 700 million euros. I don't even know what that is. I suppose that's in the player value. Is that an issue for you? I mean, how do you sort of reconcile the Champions League and where we are with this competition when it's pretty clear there are only three or four clubs that you would identify as real favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. And it will take a special team to upset the elite, to upset the Bayern Munich, the Real Madrid, the Barcelona, the teams that do spend money, the teams that have got these star players. But I think Sevilla should, again, going back to Sevilla and Europa League, they were up against teams who spent a lot more money than them as well, in terms of the Premier League teams as well, and they saw them off. And if you're a well-run club, if you've got a good coach, an intelligent coach, and your squad has been built correctly, and you have the right depth there, you have an excellent starting 11 with a few quality players who could probably go up a level, then there's every chance that you could shock. And Valencia, Sevilla, they are the teams that could actually do that. Atleti as well. They're in this little bracket of teams just under the elite that could actually stun these bigger sides on the day through a whole team performance. So I think that's where it is. The team who is best coached and then also has this squad that's being built correctly.
What is the financial impact for teams like Sevilla, Valencia in this being in this competition? And you know, obviously they want to advance. If they can get through the group, what's the financial impact on those clubs? We know Real Madrid and Barcelona are going to be rich no matter what happens, but there's got to be some significant impact for those teams.
Oh, absolutely. It's massive. If Sevilla just get through this group stage with a couple of wins under their belt and then maybe get past the first knockout stage, they will have amassed more money than they did altogether going to the final of the Europa League. That's how much the money difference between these two competitions is. So the money that they can bring in will be fantastic. And also for these teams like Valencia and Sevilla as well, a lot of their income is through player sales. That's how it comes from. So they need another outlet to bring money in. And the Champions League is perfect. It's the holy ground for them. They need to be there. They need to be getting this money in, and it's massively important for these Spanish teams.
Now let's talk about the league as it sits at the moment. Just 3 weeks in, three match days in. Barcelona top of the table, no surprise there. Real Madrid in second, okay. By the way, Real Madrid scoring 11 goals in three matches so far. We know about that 6-0 win over Espanyol, which obviously pushes their number up. We're talking about Sevilla, and they have yet to win in the league. What accounts for the slow start there?
Yeah, I think it's just a case of getting all the... I think we discussed this in one of the first podcasts in the new season about teams with lots of new players, and Sevilla are one of them. And they're just gradually adjusting to the new system, and especially when they've lost somebody like Carlos Bacca, that the team is very much built around and catered towards how he played and how they all moved around him. And now they're just finding their way with somebody like Llorente and Kevin Gamero, as we saw midweek. And they're going to take time to get there, but I think when they do, it should be interesting to watch. So that's why they're a little bit throughout the blocks at the moment. But I still think there's a lot to come from them. They've got a lot of injuries now as well. I mean, the department's defense, they've lost their goalkeeper as well, midfield. They really haven't had a full selection to choose from. So it will take time for them to get up and run, but they will.
They host Celta Vigo on Sunday, but that's a Celta Vigo team that started out very well themselves, two wins and a draw from three matches. Just handicap that one a bit for me, and how much of Celta Vigo's start is sort of the opposite maybe from what Sevilla's dealing with?
Yeah, Celta Vigo, it was another team we've discussed before, and saying, I mean, all people talk about Valencia and Sevilla, why you should watch the Liga. But I said before, if there was another team you should watch in this league this season, it's somebody like Celta Vigo. It's Villarreal, Celta Vigo, Athletic Bilbao. Celta Vigo are a very attractive team, play very nice football, very attractive to watch, very patient build-up. And they've got, they've got some little stars there in terms of Oriana and Nolito. These are good players. They're very, very good players who could easily play a high level up, but Celta have got them. They've got a very good coach in Berizzo. And right now, they're looking very strong. They're a very attacking-minded team, and they will concede goals, absolutely. As we saw, it was a 3-3 game at the weekend with Las Palmas. It was the best game of the season so far. I know it's very early, but it was the best game. It's been fantastic. And they play very attacking, and they're a team that if you get the time, you should definitely check them out, to anybody listening.
I'm looking at Barcelona's results so far. Obviously, they're perfect. They have 3 wins in 3. They started out the season with a 1-0 win over Bilbao, who they had just beaten in the Super Cup by a much larger margin. Or no, they lost to Athletic Bilbao, excuse me, in the Super Cup. So that was a bit of a redemption there. They beat Malaga 1-0, and then they do take down Atletico Madrid, which I imagine is a pretty significant thing at this point in the year. But they're not scoring the way that we expect Barcelona to score, at least not in La Liga. Is that just slow out of the blocks, or is there something else at work?
Yeah, absolutely. I think their preseason has maybe took it out of them a little bit, and they are working up to peak fitness, to peak form. They've had players drop in and out the side as well, obviously, and things are still not completely clicking at the moment there. But again, it's nothing to worry about. And I think if you look, they've navigated two of their most their dangerous away fixtures in terms of going to Santa Calderon against Aledi and then San Mamés against Athletic Bilbao. Those two fixtures are out of the way. They're horrific fixtures for any team to go to. So for the fact that they've come there with maximum points is very impressive, considering they're not at full speed, shall we say. But I think, again, this is a Barcelona team. You'll see peak again in the new year, I think. But for now, yeah, I think they'll get by. They'll be fine.
Sure, of course. I mean, you know, we imagine that they will. It would be a surprise. We don't have any Chelseas in Spain at the moment, do we? I mean, even what we just talked about with Sevilla, and you know, their expectation isn't to win a title necessarily, but even that it can be justified in some manner. Where are the surprises so far? Again, 3 matches is real tough to pin down anything, David. But there's got to be something where you're like, oh, well, that's interesting.
You would have to say, I mean, looking at the different end of the scale, is Eibar. They are up there in 5th place, and they won 2 games from their first 3. This is a team that many said, okay, these guys are down, and, you know, they're finished. And they're surprising everybody. They're putting in the hard work to, you know, they haven't got the talent or anything like that, but they've got a lot of hard work. They've got a great chemistry, a great ethic, and they're all pulling in the same direction. So that's probably the little surprise. And then Celta, as we discussed as well. So they're probably the two surprise at the moment, I would say, but there's no Chelsea case in terms of a giant splittering. Sevilla is not really on that level.
Well, what about on the other end? I mean, like Eibar in 5th, okay, that's something of a surprise. The promoted teams, you know, we're always tracking them at least early in the year to see how they're adjusting to the new level and whether or not they can scrape together some points that they can build a foundation on in order to make sure that they stay up. How is that going so far? Las Palmas, who am I missing? I'm obviously missing two teams.
Real Betis and Sporting Gijón.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah, they've all shown really big positive signs at this early stage. None of them look particularly out of their depth. I know Sporting's down there, but they got a draw against Real Madrid. They got a draw against Real Sociedad as well, you know. And Las Palmas have played some excellent football. They just probably need to defend a little more intelligence. They're not in Segunda anymore. They can't go gung-ho as they have. And Betis are obviously Betis are there as well. They've won, drawn, and lost in their first 3 games. So they're all showing really positive signs. And exactly like we said, they none of them will be pushovers. They've all got their quality to bring to the league table.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so we've got Las Palmas against Rayo Vallecano. I got some questions about Rayo Vallecano here coming up in a second. But Eibar hosting Atleti, with Eibar having surprised so far. Atleti in the Champions League, a potential for anything, any surprise there on Saturday?
Yes, coming back from Turkey, it could be one that maybe Atleti don't fancy, and they're still putting together their team, Atleti. They've been impressive, they've shown some very nice signs so far this season, but they're still clicking. I mean, for instance, Jackson hasn't really settled into the centre-forward role, so I think you're going to maybe see Torres up front in that game. They're going to have to go for a bit more muscle and a bit more experience in that game, so Eibar will definitely fancy themselves Saturday night under the floodlights at that little stadium. Oh, absolutely. They will fancy themselves.
Yeah, hopefully you're going to get a look at that game coming up on the weekend. All right, so Rayo Vallecano, who I mentioned, is away to Las Palmas this weekend. They've popped up in American soccer circles recently, David. I don't know if I've had a chance to ask you about this. If I have, I apologize, but I think it's worth reviewing. Apparently, they've decided to get involved in the lower divisions of American soccer and have bought a a stake in a team in Oklahoma City, which I'm not sure if you're familiar with Oklahoma City, middle of the country, not overly large.
Yeah.
Obviously, not a hotbed for the sport by any stretch, but it is, the game's growing here, so there's always opportunity. What would account for a club like Rayo Vallecano, who certainly isn't one of the big boys of Spanish football and really can't throw around a ton of money, but what would account for them getting involved in something like that?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting one because Rayo, the team in La Liga, one of the poorest teams, and it's a very interesting move by them because they've also made some efforts. They've gone out on a limb this summer, really, in terms of globalization, shall we say, because they've also sealed a sponsorship deal with a Chinese company. And they've also signed a Chinese player as well. And then this news came about Oklahoma City as well. So it's interesting. There's definitely an effort from them to attack different markets. It's a move that's being backed by La Liga's chief, Javier Tebas. You know, he said he'd like to see that they move into strategic markets, shall we say, and it will help them grow, get the Rayo name out there. And it's an interesting move. It really is.
Well, you know, how do La Liga teams that aren't one of the big two, how do they deal with the notion of glow? I mean, obviously, we are in this race now to spread your brand all over the world. And you know, the fans, the real fans, don't like talking about these things, but they are part of the business of football these days. How does the rest of La Liga, that isn't Barcelona and Real Madrid, and can't really just trade on their success, how do they deal with this kind of issue? And you know, is it just a matter of signing up with a Chinese company? Is there some active program they can run? I mean, we're talking about a club who, you know, who plays in a stadium of less than 15,000. It's not as though there's some sort of expectation that they're ever going to grab a large part of the world market.
Yeah, exactly. It's an interesting one. It's like a bit by bit, I think they're trying to do. Rayo are trying to get some exposure, some revenue from somewhere. It's an interesting, especially with the Chinese deal and finding a Chinese player as well. You know, revenue is obviously a big issue there. And it's just trying to create a different avenue to go down and put the name of the club out there. And it's an interesting one, and it really is. It's something you'll have to see develop over time to see what comes of it. But it is a strange one, especially, like I said, because it's Rayo Vallecano. If it was any other club, then we might not bat an eyelid. So, you know, but it would have been Rayo. It's different.
Is there a sense that this is something these clubs have to be doing in order to make up for the discrepancy in the TV money in Spain? I mean, you know, maybe Rayo Vallecano's goal is to stay up. I mean, you know, maybe it's nothing beyond that. Maybe it's one day to look for a Europa League berth. But they clearly, and this is what I dislike so much about the stratification of European football, David, it's, you always know going into a season that your goals can't outstrip your spending. So how do these clubs, I mean, is this part of that? Is it trying to make up for some of that? And if there is a fairer split of the TV money, and I think we've made progress in that area, does that eliminate the need for some of these clubs to look outside Spanish borders?
Yeah, definitely. That's why they're doing it primarily. They're looking for an extra avenue to bring a tiny little extra bit of amount of money in. If it's a big amount, then amazing. But if it's a small amount, okay, they'll happily take that as well. And they're just trying to create something else and do something differently. And in terms of this globalization, it's not something that Spanish clubs are really big on or are really wise to. It's something that I think that needs to be done. I mean, we obviously look at the Manchester City the development they have got, you know, with New York, and it's something that Spanish clubs perhaps need to do, whether you think it's a bad thing or a good thing, you know, whether it rips out the meaning of the game or whatever, but it's probably something the bigger clubs need to do, and it's something that I think you might see more often in Spain, and it's something that people who own these clubs are actively trying to do. I know Levante, the owner, has been out, and he's been trying to seek investment from different parts of the globe, and then Rayo obviously succeeded. Valencia have done it before, there's some good success as well. So yeah, it's something I think we're going to see a lot more of in the near future.
It's very interesting, very fascinating stuff. David Cartledge talking Spanish football. The Spanish clubs in the Champions League doing very well. We expect Valencia and Barcelona to perhaps continue that trend today. We're looking forward to that. Follow David on Twitter at DavidJA. CA and find his work through his Twitter account. What else should I be telling people, David? Got anything else you want to plug?
No, man, that's everything. Yeah, you've got me. That's where you find me, and that's where you'll find everything about me.
And his regular appearance is right here on Soccer Morning. David, appreciate it as always. Fantastic stuff. We'll be watching Champions League today and La Liga on the weekend. Appreciate it.
Great joining you.
There goes David Cartledge. Good stuff from him. We will take a break, and we'll come back, and we'll set up the phones, and you can call me, and we can talk about all of this, and the Champions League, and Oklahoma City, and MLS, and CONCACAF Champions League, and the schedule switch, and everything else in a minute. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com.
I've got five broke strings on a broke guitar.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
We are back on Soccer Morning on a Wednesday. A Wednesday that brings us soccer. Lovely, lovely soccer. Champions League in Europe. MLS action tonight with a couple of games. And then you have Vancouver in the CONCACAF Champions League as well. So a big match day. Big match day all over the place. I think the highlight of the day, I mean, look. You can't say anything negative about the UEFA Champions League. I mean, duh. Olympiacos, Bayern Munich, Chelsea, Maccabi Tel Aviv, Valencia, St. Petersburg, Roma, Barcelona. That's a huge one. Clearly, these are big games. But in this part of the world, nothing bigger than New England, New York, with first place in the Eastern Conference hanging in the balance. If New England wins, they jump over the Red Bulls and DC United into first place in the East. If the Red Bulls win, they extend their lead over DC United, or they create a gap between themselves and DC United. Right now, tied on points, but again, they've got games in hand. And we know that seeding matters on some level, not only because the MLS Cup championship game, the MLS Cup final, will be played at the home of the club with the highest number of points left in the tournament, but also because you get to start at home in the playoffs. Or you get home, yeah, whatever I just said. Because actually, Red Bulls, DC United right now holding down those top two spots, those are the spots that go into those semifinals where you play home and away two-legged series. So we'll see how this plays out tonight. I think that New England at home is the way to go. I've got 2-1 for New England, but I'm willing to hear dissent on this subject. So give me a call, 646-832-3909. We'll get you in. You can talk about MLS or the Champions League, as I mentioned. All right, we're having an issue with the phones. All right, do you want to, maybe if I reset the phone system, should we reset the phone system? I'm just going to talk to Trevor here for a second, guys. Just hold on 1 second. Just get check with the boss man. See what we need to do to get the phones working. I want to be able to talk to the people. Okay. Let me. I don't think so. I'm in the host room. Okay. Anyway, let's take a quick break. That's a good idea. Let's get the tech fixed. Get the tech fixed. We'll come back. We'll fix. Yeah. We'll get you on the line. Soccer Morning, worldsoccertalk.com.
Welcome back to Soccer Morning on World Soccer Talk with Jason Davis.
All right, I am back, but the phones are not. The phones are just screwed for today. Our apologies. The technology does not want to work. That occasionally happens. There's literally nothing we can do. I know you have thoughts, concerns, and questions, and you want to get them in, and I'd love to talk to you, but there's just no way to get that working today. So this is what we're going to do. We're going to spend the next couple of minutes just talking out some of the issues and stories of the day. If you want to throw in anything, hit me up on Twitter, at Soccer Morning. That's the best way to get your thoughts of what's going on the program. You know, which games are you looking forward to most today? I mean, this is a full schedule. This is more than you might even get some weekends occasionally. Well, it depends, of course. We usually have league schedules, but you got Champions League, the pinnacle of club football in the world, even if not all of these matchups meet that standard. And you've got MLS with a couple of big games. And again, the New England-New York clash is the more sexy of the two, with first place on the line in the Eastern Conference. But you've also got Toronto visiting New York City FC. And this one is intriguing in part because of Toronto's place in the Eastern Conference standings right now and how they're trying to hold on to a playoff spot. They've never made the playoffs in their history. So to get there would be an achievement. Now, that, of course, you know, our goal is the MLS Cup. Of course, everybody wants to win a championship. And in this league, you can reasonably imagine yourself winning a championship even if you finish fifth in the Eastern Conference. Right now, the gap between Toronto and Montreal is 5 points. Montreal has two games in hand on Toronto FC. One of those is going to go away tonight. If Toronto does not beat New York City FC or loses, let's say it that way, if they lose to NYCFC tonight, it's not going to be easy. I mean, Yankee Stadium presents some quirks. It's not as though Toronto's in such good form that they can walk into that building and beat a team that's in turmoil. They're going to have a struggle. They may have a struggle. And if they lose this match, that puts Montreal 5 points back with only one game with three games in hand again, and an opportunity to climb back and maybe jump over Toronto FC. And then we're talking about, okay, now is Toronto going to be pulled back down into a struggle just to make it into the playoffs at all? Because there is only one thing there's only one way that Toronto's season is a success, and that's making the playoffs. They can't finish seventh and say, oh, but we had a good year. And you know, Jovinko was really good in 2015. And Michael Bradley was okay. I mean, what are you going to say? How are you going to build on that? You need the playoffs. They need the playoffs so that they can create that stability, not only with the players. And imagine Jovinko and Bradley and Altidore and Osorio and all of these guys need some reason to stick around for the near future if they see some positive growth in this team. But, you know, Toronto needs a reason not to fire Greg Vanney. I say it that way. Toronto FC needs a reason to keep Greg Vanney around. And I'm not saying that Greg Vanney's a great coach. I'm not saying that he's the right coach. But if he gets them to the playoffs, at least you have some stability. At least you know, okay, he got them there. That's never happened before. We can move into 2016 with the same core of players and the same coach, with some notion of how we want to identify ourselves and play. It's got to be more than Jovinko, give Jovinko the ball and let him do some stuff. And they got to shore up that defense. But making the playoffs would be a good step in the direction of proving to their fans they're headed in the right direction. And allowing them to keep that base in place. The base that is Greg Vanney as the head coach of Toronto FC. Man, I saw there's something just sad today. Let me see if I pull. I did click the link. I've got the tab somewhere. Josh Gatt. Once upon a time, an exciting prospect for the U.S. men's national team. Player that went from Michigan and high school soccer to Molde, where he blazed a trail with his incredible speed up and down the wing in Norway. That was back in 2012. I mean, it's a long time ago. He's had so many injuries. Now, this is from starsandstripesfc.com. Josh Gatt, who I follow on Twitter, put something up on his Instagram. It appears as if we won't see Josh Gatt play soccer again for a while. The speedy winger who had so many around the American soccer world buzzing in 2012 with his spectacular play with Molde FK posted a heartfelt Instagram message this morning. In it, he informs us that a second attempt to repair his left knee was unsuccessful and that a third surgery was needed. This is from Josh Gatt's Instagram. A lot has happened to me these past months. I've seen a lot of doctors in many different countries to find and solve the problem, which has been my left knee. I've had a terrible string of injuries and adversity that made me question the choices I've made and if I should continue to make the same choices again. Most of you don't know what happened, but to fill you in, I had to repair my knee again. The last surgery I had didn't take the way we'd hope, and it led to more damage in my knee. I wish I could say things would be easy and I'd be back sooner rather than later, but that's not the truth. The truth is I have to start at square one a third time. But that doesn't change what I have to do. I choose to fight. I choose to get back up after getting knocked down again. I choose to never give up and work every day as hard as I can to continue chasing my dreams. They are far from gone and not even close to out of reach. Some might not believe I can do it, which is your opinion, and it's fine, but it's not my opinion. I know I'll play again. I will work as hard as I can every day to reach my goals and to play again. I'm a fighter. I am not a quitter, and I will get better. For those of you who support and believe me, I could not ask for anything more, and I hope you know I truly appreciate that with all my heart. If you can show me faith and believe in my recovery, I will return the favor in kind by doing everything I can to get back to that field. Wish me some luck and keep a lookout in the future. I will make a comeback. Josh Gatt. And that's just a sad story. I mean, I really do hope the kid gets back on the field and can do something positive with his career. Because there's nothing more painful than to see a talented player. And I don't know what Josh Gatt's ceiling was going to be. I mean, who knows? We might never know now. But there's nothing more tragic than seeing a talented player have his ability to play limited by injuries. His career cut short by injuries if it comes to that. His career marked by long stretches of being out. I mean, Americans, I'm sure every nation has these guys. Incredibly talented players at a young age who look like they're going to be the future and then can't get past injury. But I mean, we have such touchstone moments in the history of the American national team because we haven't been doing it that long at a high level. John O'Brien, I mean, that's the number one guy. Stuart Holden, who I still trying to work back, is maybe transitioning into television, but is still trying to work back. Now Josh Gatt. I'm sure there's a number of players. I mean, who's on the list? The top five players who injury ruined their chances of becoming what they could possibly have become. I feel as though it wouldn't take a lot to put that list together. Edward on Twitter, as far as Toronto, New York City, FC, I expect another shootout. NYCFC can't contain Gio. Toronto can't contain Villa. Villa's completely healthy. I mean, I know he came off at halftime in Frisco. Was that probably to help save him for a stretch run here? Now, I don't think NYCFC is making the playoffs, but I guess having a healthy David Villa and having him ready to play at home is probably the way to go if you're Jason Christ. All right. Let's get ready to wrap this one up. Again, apologies for the phone lines, guys. We didn't know that was going to happen. Clearly, technology didn't want to cooperate today. Technology is our friend in a lot of cases. Today it was not. But we will be back ready to go tomorrow. Hopefully the phones work. We'll talk Champions League and the fallout from today's action. CONCACAF Champions League, MLS as well. We'll see if this is a shootout up at NYCFC at Yankee Stadium. And we'll do more soccer. Find us on backheel.com, worldsoccertalk.com. Give us a rating and a review at iTunes. Buy a t-shirt and a mug, and I'll talk to you tomorrow. Later. Did my invitations disappear? What I put my heart on every cursive letter? Tell me why the hell.